Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Survival of the Fittest by Jonathan Kellerman. Hooray for Hollywood. Brass stars with celebrities' names were inlaid in the sidewalk, but the stars of the night were toxin merchants, strong-arm specialists, and 15-year-olds running from family values turned vicious. Open 24 hours a day, Goji's welcomed them all. The coffee shop sat on the north side of Hollywood Boulevard, east of Vine, between a tattoo parlor and a thrash metal bar. At 3 a.m., Nolan Dahl pulled his cruiser into the front loading zone. He locked the black and white and entered the restaurant, sauntering the way only 220 pounds of young, muscular cop, laden with baton, belt, radio, flashlight, and holstered 9mm, could saunter. The place smelled rancid, and the aisle of deep red carpet between the duct-taped orange booths was stained beyond redemption. Dahl settled at the rear, allowing himself a view of the Filipina cashier. The next booth was occupied by a 23-year-old pimp from Compton named Terrell Cochrane, and one of his employees, a chubby 16-year-old mother of two named Germadine Batts. Nolan Dahl couldn't have cared less about either of them, or the five other things scattered around the bright room. A slim, pretty waitress, the color of molasses, hurried down the aisle and stopped at Nolan's booth, smiling. Nolan smiled back, waved away a menu, and asked for coconut cream pie and coffee, please.
"New on the night shift?" asked the waitress.
Nolan smiled again and shook his head. He'd been working Hollywood night shift for 3 months, but had never patronized Goji's, getting his sugar rush from a Dunkin' on Highland recommended by Wes Baker. Cops and donuts. Big joke.
"Never seen you before, officer."
"Well," he said, "life's full of new experiences." The waitress laughed, then went and brought Nolan's order and watched as he tasted a forkful of pie.
"Good,"
he said, though the coconut tasted like bad piña colada mix and the cream was gluey. He was a practiced culinary liar. As a kid, when his mother had served swill, he'd said, "Delish," along with Helena and Dad.
"Anything else, officer?"
"Not for now, thanks," he said.
"Nothing you've got," he thought.
"Okay, just let me know."
Nolan smiled again, and she left. The cop ate the rest of the pie, finished his coffee and his water, and the waitress was there right away with refills.
"Bitch," thought Terrell.
After bringing Terrell's and Germadine's food, she'd mostly ignored them. Terrell lifted his burger and watched her say something to the cop. The cop just kept smiling and shaking his head. The bitch gave the cop his check, and the cop gave her money, and she turned all grinny. A 20, keep it, was the reason. Fuckers always tipped big, but this, all that smiling, must be celebrating something. The cop looked into his empty coffee cup. Then something came out from under the table. His gun. He was smiling at Terrell, showing him the gun. Terrell's bowels gave way as he ducked under the table, not bothering to push down on Germadine's head, though he'd had plenty of practice doing that. The other patrons saw Terrell's dive, the transsexuals and the drunken long-haul truck driver behind them, and the toothless, senile 90-year-old man in the first booth. Everyone ducked, except the Ethiopian waitress who'd been talking to the Filipina cashier. She stared, too terrified to move, as Nolan slid the 9mm between his lips and, sucking like a baby, fixed his gaze on the waitress's pretty face. A beautiful, black, final image, Nolan thought. God, this place smelled crappy. He pulled the trigger. Helena Dahl gave me a mourner's account. The rest I got from the papers and from Milo. The young cop's suicide merited only 2 inches on page 23 with no follow-up. But the flashpoint violence stayed with me, and when Milo called a few weeks later and asked me to see Helena, I said, "That one. Any idea yet why he did it?"
"Nope. That's probably what she wants to talk about. Rick says don't feel obligated, Alex. This comes secondhand. She's a nurse at Cedars, worked with him in the ER, and doesn't want to see the in-house shrinks. But it's not like she's a close friend."
"Has the department done its own investigation?"
"Probably.
You haven't heard anything?"
Those kinds of things are kept quiet, and I'm not exactly in the loop. Only thing I've heard is the kid was different, quiet, stuck to himself, read books."
"Books?" I said. "Well, there's a motive for you." He laughed.
"Guns don't kill, introspection does."
I laughed back. But I thought about that. Helena Dahl called me that evening, and I arranged to see her in my home office the following morning. She arrived precisely on time, a tall, handsome woman of 30. No jewelry, no wedding ring. She tried to smile, thanked me for seeing her, then followed me. The new house is set up for therapy. I take patients in through a side door, crossing the Japanese garden and passing the fish pond. People usually stop to look at the koi, or at least comment, but she didn't. Inside, she sat very straight, with her hands on her knees.
"This is the first time I've done this."
Her voice was soft and low.
"Even after my divorce, I never talked to anyone. I really don't know what I expect."
"Maybe to make some sense of it," I said gently. "Some questions may never be answered."
"Well, at least you're honest. There was really no warning, Dr. Delaware. He was such a..."
Then she cried. Then she spilled it out.
"Nolan was smart," she said. "Brilliant. So the last thing you'd think he'd end up being was a cop. No offense to Rick's friend, but that's not exactly what comes to mind when you think intellectual, right?"
Milo had a master's degree in literature. I said, "So Nolan was an intellectual?"
"Definitely."
"How much education did he have?"
2 years of college. Cal State Northridge. Psychology major, as a matter of fact."
"He didn't finish?"
"He had trouble finishing things. Maybe it was rebellion. Our parents were heavily into education. Maybe he just got sick of classes. I don't know. I'm 3 years older, was already working by the time he dropped out. No one expected him to join the police. The only thing I can think of is he'd gotten politically conservative, real law and order. But still, the other thing is, he always loved sleaze."
"Sleaze?"
"Spooky stuff, the dark side of things. As a kid, he was always into horror movies, really gross stuff, the grossest. His senior year in high school, he went through a stage where he grew his hair long and listened to heavy metal and pierced his ears 5 times. My parents were convinced he was into Satanism or something."
"Was he?"
"Who knows? But you know parents."
"Where'd you grow up?" I said.
"The Valley, Woodland Hills. My father was an engineer, worked at Lockheed, passed away 5 years ago. My mother was a social worker, but never worked. She's gone, too."
"Any other family?"
"No, just Nolan and me. He never married, and I'm divorced. No kids. My ex is a doctor. He decided he wanted to be a farmer, so he moved to North Carolina."
"So you're bearing all this alone," I said.
"Yep. Where was I? Oh, the satanic nonsense. No big deal. It didn't last long. And then Nolan got back to normal teenage stuff. School, sports, girls, his car. The truth is, Dr. Delaware, Nolan and I lost touch as adults. We were never close. And now..."
More tears. Then,
"I had him cremated. He left a will. All his stuff is mine. Dad's and Mom's stuff, too."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?